fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. 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 Radio! Radio!
Attend a funeral. It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char, and let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
And as you are here. Today is June 21st, 2020, and Jim Fetzer, our beloved host, will not be with us this evening. Mitchell Bupp, producer, and Chicago Brew are here to fulfill this time slot on his behalf. So, Mitchell, are you there with me?
Yes, sir. How you doing today, Chicago Brew?
Very good. Unfavored to our listeners' delight, we will not be putting together such a wonderful formatted show such as our host, James Fetzer. Today, we're going to kind of wing it. We're going to walk through this. Hopefully, we do something that's entertaining, bring out some light of information. But for the most part, nobody has ever accused me of being a well-organized or formatting a show. So with you as my wingman here and wonderful producer, yes, sir, I'm bringing you on board. I know you had a big day today. You were out canvassing for signatures for your Virginia run for Congress. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I'm gonna have to be absent here for the next off and on, probably for the most part for the next at least several weeks, as I crack down on getting ballot signatures and raising money to pay for the fee, the $3,500 fee to get your name on the ballot. I got into a discussion with my sister today about that, and she, the only person that she won't vote for me because she's afraid the Republican will lose. And I explained to her he's already lost, you know, because he's joined the establishment and the party itself. And whether it's a Democrat or Republican, you know, they don't really represent the American people. They represent their Marxist and special interest groups that, well, that give them money. So, you know, we're looking at a, we have to have a full-fledged revolt in the voting system. And everybody in the world is caught in this trap that I explained to my sister that right now they're saying you have to vote for Trump or you have to vote Republican. Well, I can understand voting for Trump because, one, he's really not a true Republican. But voting for any member of Congress that's a Republican or a Democrat is a failure on the voters' part itself because they have a monopoly. And they've had this monopoly for so long, you know. And you got clowns like Joe Biden. Joe Biden's been in government for oh gosh, let me pull this little graphic I have here up so and look at it. Joe Biden entered politics in 1969, 51 years in government, and his campaign is pretty much, I'm here to fix the government. I mean, if you haven't fixed it in half a century, you pack your shit up and go home. Chuck Schumer, 45 years. Nancy Pelosi, 33 years in government. Patrick Leahy, 54 years in government. Dirty Waters, Maxine, entered politics in 1973. Shit, I was just a junior in high school then when Dirty Waters, Maxine, got in Congress. And then you got Dianne Feinstein, entered politics in 1960. There's a reason we have a failed government, and that's because we have failed leadership in Congress. Plus, we don't have the oversight. I mean, we don't have the government officials to do proper oversight of any government. Because, you know, when we say administration of a government, we're really not talking about the temporary clowns that are appointed. We're talking about the rank and file civil service people that are really the people that control the paperwork, control the government. They control the paperwork. And, you know, Trump makes a decision and he passes it to somebody that's supposed to do the job. And that guy passes it to somebody else who does part of the job, but not the whole job, not the way it was supposed to be done. And, you know, and as you go down away from Trump, you have this, I don't know, trickle down, vacuum. It's a vacuum because what happens is that when Trump essentially gives an order, it goes down through the government, and the people who are in the government that are essentially the resistors for the deep state shadow government, some are Democrats, some are Republicans, some think they're just protecting their, you know, the FBI, the CIA, you know, the DOJ, you know, their little fiefdom within government. And that's part of what it is. But government has failed. And it failed because of career politicians that we have here. So, yeah.
You know, it's funny how, you know, Nancy Pelosi, Feinstein, the names you were just mentioned, especially Joe Biden, that all these years in each one of them, 30 plus years, 40 years, this and that and the other, you know, hundreds of years in Congress, in the political sphere of the United States. But in the last 3 years, it's all Donald Trump's fault. That's what I hear. I hear this all the time.
Yeah, that's what they say. It's all Donald Trump's fault.
Well, I mean, the moment he came down the escalator, it was his fault. You know, I mean, it just we're all scapegoats here. Nobody is immune from being the scapegoat. I mean, the nobody is the ones they don't like, and it's, you know, the ones that don't play with the same ball as them. And this is the unfortunate thing. We're all scapegoats here. And it's a mob mentality, and it's the power structure and the financial structure and the medical structure. They're just all against us. We are the outliers, and we got to ask ourselves. And I ask myself, even though I kind of know some of the answers, is how did we get here? What do you think?
Well, we got here by, you know, these so-called educated professionals that are professional grifters, you know, and the list of people I just talked about, you know, realize they have 290 years in government between these jackasses. And they say they need to fix government. Well, first, to fix government, they have to get the hell out of government and get the hell out of the way so we can see and understand exactly what we're dealing with. This is really one of the reasons why I kind of wanted to run for Congress, because we don't know what the hell Congress is doing. It's a gang. It's a left gang and a right-hand gang. And they do what the hell they want. And we're wondering what the hell is really going on. And we only get glimpses of the truth. And most everything is a charade, as you said. You know, we're all in this, we're all on the stage of the world right now. And, you know, we're all being punked and we're all being screwed and we're being blamed for the results of their governing. And I think that's just one of the biggest things that people have to understand, you know, that, you know, we've had Democratic and Republican legislation for as long as this country has existed since the Civil War. It hasn't worked.
The new country since the Civil War, the Reconstruction, the Abe Lincoln as the face of the new face of America. So if you wanted to start American history there, plenty want to do that. And they, in fact, right now they're in the midst of erasing that even. They want American history to start right now.
No. American history started in 1619.
And the significant date for 1619 for you is what?
Well, I don't know. That's the New York Times, you know, when the first in the colonies, I believe they were Spanish, brought the first slaves to the New World. I don't even know if it was called America then. I don't even know, you know, in all honesty, you know, the newfound world. Actually just this, was it yesterday, the day before, former vice presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton's vice presidential candidate, Timmy Kaine from Virginia, said that slavery is wholly an American invention. I'm serious.
We heard it. We heard it. Well, that's Timmy Kaine. You know, his son is very prominent in the Antifa movement, and along with a lot of the others, sons and daughters, like de Blasio, his daughter is Antifa. And Tim Kaine, the story goes all the way back to 2017 during the Washington, Donald Trump's inauguration. Tim Kaine's son got arrested with Antifa then, and you should see his mugshot. It's pretty disheveled. But that's the new moment. These people, they just train their kids to do this mishmash, this combatant, this Bolshevik style takeover of America.
Right. Well, where I am here, you know, I have to use guerrilla tactics, basically, to even really get on the ballot, even in a reduced capacity. Of ballot petitioning. And I now on the 23rd of June, the Democrats themselves will be doing their, they have four candidates that want to vie for the seat here in the 5th District, Virginia's 5th District. So they're going to have primary voting. And I called them and contacted them and said, hey, I'm an independent here in the 5th District. You know, I wanted to come to your polling place or polling places and, you know, and get ballot signatures.
Speaking of the ballot signatures, you just want to briefly, I know you've spoken about it on your own broadcast, which is Revolution in the Morning, Monday through Fridays at revolution.radio, freedomslips.com. Follow us on Twitter at freedom_slips at Twitter. But you've spoken about how the hoops you had to jump through just to get the signatures, because absolutely this pandemic, this scamdemic, this hoax, this fraud, this whatever we're on to call it, this lockdown of America had prevented you from even going out to get signatures. And there were, you had a court case with Robert Barnes as your representative, as your attorney. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Is myself, And the second plaintiff in the case was the Constitution Party of Virginia. The third person or group to join was the Green Party of Virginia. They joined in the suit against the state of Virginia on ballot petitioning requirements. And, you know, we're not talking about just, you know, just one office. You know, we've got the Libertarian Party then joined us, and also the Independent Green Party. And, you know, candidates for president and vice president, for the U.S. Senate, for the U.S. House of Representatives here in Virginia. They, you know, for the U.S. House, we had to have to gather 1,000 signatures. And because of this problem and doing that and trying to, because of the lockdown, the social isolation, really, and also this psychological fear barrier of talking to people and everything else, it's impossible. It was even impossible for the for a Republican. What was his name? Faulkner was his last name. And he sued in March of this year, the state of Virginia, about his ballot petitioning requirements for the Republican Senate primary. And he needed to gather 400 signatures from each district, plus a total of 10,000. Now, he went to court, and a different judge, in a separate case in March, and he won, you know, basically a 2/3 reduction. And but that time they had extended the GOP primary and all this other stuff. And so the state of Virginia and the Virginia Department of Elections was not going to give equal footing, I guess, or an equal opportunity for all candidates at that particular level. All candidates, if they wanted, you know, we were essentially forced to sue the government. In Virginia, because the government would not have done a damn thing. And see, that's part of the problem. You know, the government, when they knew they had a problem here in Virginia, when the government
this government would be Governor Northam, would it not?
Northam, yeah. Ralphie. Good old Ralph. Yeah. It's an interesting thing. And so we had to sue to get our rights that basically should have been given to all candidates at an earlier time, so we would know and understand what was actually happening and what requirements we had to do. But the state of Virginia neglected to do that. Basically, it's just another form of Jim Crow. And I'm not black, and I'm not a qualified minority, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, but I am a minority candidate. So clearly, you know, Virginia still has systemic racism built into its system. The only difference is its favor for Democrats today instead of Republicans. And, you know, that's really what we see all across the United States. If you're, you know, if you're honest with yourself and you look, you know, you see corrupt governments that are essentially locking out candidates because they don't want competition. Well, that's what it boils down to.
Well, it's we got boxed in. This is never meant to be two parties, which these two parties are incorporated. You have the Democrat Party is a corporation. The Republican Party is a corporation. Basically, they have created a monopoly. Yep. Monopoly that they have rigged against you, because who's been in power for the longest? They have. And they create all these rules and regulations and all sorts of hoops and barrels for you to jump through and over and so on and so forth. And you will never get it, because on top of it all, they have the power of the purse. They have the power of law enforcement. They have the power to make things up. They want to get rid of a candidate. It ain't darn hard. They've blackmailed and pushed out a whole bunch of people, even billionaires such as Ross Perot. You know, so go ahead.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. And, you know, anybody who goes into politics as an independent, as any third party candidate, they're not there to get rich. They're there because of their concern for America. Sure, the Green Party, you know, that's pretty communist socialist, you know, I understand that, you know, and there's a lot of Soros support. We also, you know, the Independent Green Party, their big thing is railways and such. The Constitution Party, well, they're pretty self-explanatory. The Libertarian Party, I like the Libertarian Party, but their idea of freedom is outside the bounds of what the American people could handle, because we are not a responsible society, and we're not a responsible country, and people are not responsible, and they're not held responsible for, you know, their own actions. And, you know, well, I can't say that. Some are, but what they say is, you know, it's not my fault. And, you know, everybody has a choice. You have a bad choice or a worse choice, but, you know, you try to choose the best choice available. You know, often, you know, people just, they do whatever the hell they think they can get away with. And I can't explain, you know, how Democrats have turned from this progressive community that essentially has said they want to help people into this this fascist party that essentially has the command and demand aspect of if you're not with us, you're against us. If you do not kiss the ass of Black Lives Matters, you're the enemy. If you don't kiss the ring of the Democrat Party, you are essentially exorcised or an exiled into a wasteland, because they have gotten to that point where, you know, liberals are demanding and people are acquiescing.
Let me just, they're desperate. They've held on to power so long. They actually, the one side has held it through, you know, you had Bush Sr., you had the Clintons, then you had Bush Jr., then you had Barack Obama, then you were supposed to have Hillary Clinton. They lost hold of the ball. That's been the issue. And they want that ball back. We do have two different factions here. I'm not going to get into the details here. Many people know, are aware, there are different factions. They lost control of that ball. Everything they're doing now is out of desperation. They pulled out all the works, including the kitchen sink, to try and get that power back. And if it means destroy everything and burn everything down in the process, they will do it as long as they get their power back, because then they will rebuild in their own image, which is
the other piece of
the process.
I agree. And here's part of the other piece of that, Brew, is that right now these powers that should not be, these banksters, they are, you know, it's, we're having a major reset in midst of all of this confusion and pandemic and rioting. The basic government systems are being evolved right before us. And because of the political battle that everybody is we're focused on right now, nobody is seeing this, or I should say not many people right now. It'll become clear, you know, a little later, but they're seeing a massive reset, a reset with the dollar. And, this idea, whether bad news for America, because we're going to lose. Where the U.S. dollar has been depreciated so much from this Ponzi scheme that, it's got to the point where they have to change the gear. And the U.S. dollar is going to be pushed aside for this, for a new digital currency. And basically, what is going to happen is this digital currency will be the world reserve currency, and then all other currencies, including the U.S. dollar, will have to borrow or trade within the SDR, as they're calling it, a sovereign drawing rights financial instrument. And it's just a continuation of this depreciating asset Ponzi that we have now. And, this worldwide pandemic, because clearly the responses that were planned were designed to do certain things. It was designed to kill small businesses and leave the major international corporations alone and allow them to gain a market share for small businesses. Most of them, in all honesty, 50% or more will never come back. And so, we're looking at a multi-tiered attack, and it's during this reset. The problem, reaction, solution, the Hegelian dialectic, they run different operations and they put us in a position and then they bail us out. But when they bail us out, it's never the same as it was before. And this idea, and this is the other thing, this idea of this COVID-19 and this an extra division among people. Because there's people that, that know and understand that, number one, you can't stop the COVID-19. You can wear a mask, you can wear a damn bubble suit, but you're not going to stop it. And the only way China stopped it was to shut down their whole country. And, did they want to shut down their own country because they were having, they were in this Hong Kong protest mode on mainland China, not just in Hong Kong. So, that helped knock that down. It rallied the Chinese people around the Communist Party. And it's exactly like this coming conflict in between China and India. you know, China has to have that. The same way China has to have the United States as the enemy, because that brings the people together in China instead of, you know, it would be like somebody attacking the United States and then all of a sudden the Democrat and Republican parties are on board and are behind the president. You know, the Chinese are essentially doing the same kind of psyop and with India and Taiwan and and the United States. So, you know, we're looking at this major reset, and it's there's a lot of different pieces of this.
There is a search. I believe you could just put in the keywords global reset, and there's some plans that we pulled up of what they want to do by the bankers and so on. But that's for another time. We do have a passenger in the green room. But
okay, let me pull our friend in.
As you dial him up, I do want to ask, do you have a contribution website, anybody that can add to your campaign or to donate?
Not yet. I'm going to set up a page tonight or tomorrow. And right now I don't have a bank account, so I'll take my donations through PayPal. But by Wednesday, I'll have a bank account set up. And I was kind of, I'm holding everything kind of close until I actually kind of figured out what was actually going on. Because of, you know, the government really, the government has their monopoly, and, you know, the Democrats, they have their monopoly and they're not going to give it up. And, you know, everything is gerrymandered. Everything is already split up into territories that, you know, that will be changed just because the changing demographic. But in Virginia, they had such overreach by Ralph Northam on the Second Amendment. They've already lost. They already lost one House. Virginia House seat because of it, and they're going to lose more. So Democrats are going to get their ass handed to them the next election here.
Well, you know, Northam has been leading the way on the reach around and, violating, you know, your personal space amongst other things. You know, he is just a scandal. I mean, we can go back. How does this guy even be in office if they didn't run him out of Dodge? We're going to keep him comfortable, you know. Well, he's talking about late stage abortion or even abortion, murdering children after they've been born. This is what this guy, this alleged pediatrician, he's a pediatrician. Am I wrong? And this is how he's talking. How could anybody even bother to stand for that? What kind of, you would never think of what should be a wholesome state such as Virginia. But before we go on to our guest here, I just want to ask real quick, what party are you with? What are you running under? Or with
myself, America,
the Mitchell Buff,
an independent. I'm a revolutionary, a real revolutionary, because I don't believe I need a political party.
All right, very good. So we will all be waiting for your announcement of what can be how they can contribute to your campaign. And we do wish you the best of luck with that, Mitchell. And we do appreciate you helping with us through this first half hour. In the green room here, we have LB Bork, of the author of The Red Amendment and founder of the People's Awareness Coalition, which centers on constitutional law and political awareness. The Red Amendment site is at redamendment.net. People's Awareness Coalition, founded in 1998. The PAC Alliance are friends of the coalition. So we're going to ask LB, and I asked him here today to talk about the 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment and the pivotal role these have in our American history. LB, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rue.
You're welcome.
How you doing?
Very good. It away. We're just going to stand by and listen to you here for several minutes and let you give us a historical lesson on, again, the 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment, what it meant then and what it definitely has the impact on today as we see all this chaos in our world and this beautiful heritage America is the way it's not supposed to be. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, I'll try to behave myself. a lot of people don't like what I have to say usually. And I'll try to keep it simple. A friend of mine and I were talking this morning about how the movie Gladiator with Ridley Scott in the year 2000 kind of parallels what's going on with the United States right now and has been for quite a while. And I think it'll be one of the sales tools I'll use from now on. Not that I didn't know about it. It just came to me that things are always changing in my mind about how to explain things to people and what's going on. And, of course, movies can either have predictive programming type things in it or maybe warnings by some people. Or, you know, but most people in America, especially, they're just brainwashed so much that when they're watching a movie, they generally pick no parallels or message up in them. Kind of like George Orwell's 1984 and Animal Farm. He Orwell had a definite message in his books. He basically wasn't predicting the future, but he knew the future because he himself was a socialist. And he knew what the plan was, and he was kind of, I don't know if he's flaunting what was going to happen or warning people what was going to happen. But I myself, knowing what's going to happen, would never be a socialist like he was. So I'm of the opinion that he was maybe flaunting it. But you can't tell, because similar to what Marcus Aurelius in Gladiator portrayed, is he thought he made a mistake, because in that movie, Rome was going around, and in the real life, Rome went from a republic to an empire, okay? And this is where our parallel starts. But Aurelius said in the movie that he was ready to turn things back to the senators, which our governmental system under the United States of America, the corporation, as some people call it, is very similar. In my book, The Red Amendment, goes into this. And of course, I don't mention this movie. I keep it in matter of fact of law and history and things of that nature. But during the Civil War under Reconstruction, born to be an empire, but it wasn't as solid as it was with the Civil War. And as people know, the president writes executive orders. Those are kind of a corporate policy. They're not really law, and you'll see varied opinions. I think Michigan just went through one where the governor wrote a executive order, and it was denounced by the courts. So they're playing this back and forth game under the 14th Amendment. But anyway, the 14th Amendment basically created the empire. And as you see, the United States goes around the world conquering other countries, just like it was portrayed in Gladiator. And, you know, it's a little different system, but it's pretty much the same. And I think Ridley Scott and the writers of that movie were kind of telling us, you know, get your act together, get the republic back. And that's what I've been trying to do for 20 years, 22 years now, well, the People's Awareness Coalition.
For our listeners here, do you have it in front of you, the wording, the verbiage of the 14th Amendment?
Oh, it's pretty extensive. I can...
Well, you give us, you know, cliff notes.
Okay. The first section basically declares, you know, Americans, all the states, citizens in the states, one citizenry under the federal government. So what Section 1 did is pull Americans into the federal government's control in general respect.
Because prior to that, everyone was considered a state's citizen under the individual state's constitution.
Correct. Which they still are, but they created a dual citizenship, which is basically you know, a formula created by the synagogue of Satan. Some people call it Israel. The dual citizenship idea is something that they came up with, and it's extended into the 14th Amendment so they can play games.
Whenever we talk about those dual citizens in Congress, we're actually pointing the finger at ourselves because we're all dual citizens under this 14th Amendment, correct?
Right. It's just a formula or something that they've dealt or done to manipulate law to their legal system. And basically, the 14th Amendment created a legal system. And people don't know about this. It's pretty bad.
One thing that chimes in my head, and it always chimes in my head, is that they say they created the 14th Amendment to free the slaves, to give the slaves, you know, the freedom, right, their rights, and so on and so forth. But in actuality, what it did is in turn made slaves of us all with this U.S. citizenship.
Right.
You want to smooth that out for me here?
Well, you said it pretty much intact there. That's it in a nutshell. But one thing, if you study history also with the Roman Empire, there's a book I read quite a while ago by Rudolf Sohm, and it's it was given to me by one of the people in the year 2000. It was right after I released my first edition of the Red Amendment, but he basically said that the Roman Empire became the empire when corporations were included in the realm of the law of persons, and that's how people of the Republic of Rome were treated, and that's how we were technically treated before Reconstruction. And if you do enough research, you'll find that corporations got massive amounts of power under the 14th Amendment. That's another factor of Section 1. And if you listen to people like Mitt Romney, he says corporations are people too, which is him saying we're screwing you with our corporations, and it's under the 14th Amendment. And if you look at people like the Koch brothers, one recently died, but they wanted to help spread the 14th Amendment principles across the world. So that's your New World Order in a nutshell, corporate policy. Mussolini called it fascism. A corporate power when the states merge with corporations. The government merges with corporations. You have fascism. But Section 2 basically sets up the new political system, and that's what people don't like about my work, because it says right in there it's a crime to vote. It because they couldn't do what they did. If you watch movies such as Spielberg's Lincoln, where he talked about the 13th Amendment, the one that's in place right now. We can get into the old one a bit, but it's really a red herring. They said things like, you know, we're freeing the slaves, like you said, Brew. But that was just like Black Lives Matter is today. They use the blacks as a tool, or they used the blacks as a tool back then to do the system, and you're using Black Lives Matter today to maintain the system. It's really sad. It's unfortunate. There's a few black people that know this, and they fight it, but it's unfortunate that no one really knows about this. So, yeah, the blacks are being used. They've been used for 150 years under this system, and I think it even carried on before that. But anyway, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is basically it creates a two-hat principle. Under Section 2, when people vote, they're rebelling against the original system, which makes them criminals. The language of the section says it right in there. So they're put into servitude or slavery. And Section 3 basically says that you can't participate in this government as an officer of any kind, meaning a governor, a judge, a representative or senator, unless you uphold the original Constitution. So they're insurgents, but the people that are voting and the people under Section 2 are considered rebels. And rebels are treason, you know, committing treason. So basically the 14th Amendment's making people commit treason. And Section 4 of the 14th Amendment does three specific things. It says the slaves once emancipated, which I consider myself. I emancipated myself 20 years ago under stipulations that they allow. But, you know, their game is to keep people confused, dazed and confused and not knowing law. Of course, as you know, they don't want people knowing law because they don't teach it in school whatsoever. So they want to control people with law. The other one is that the people in the system cannot tell what's going on. It's under the pensions and bounties section of the fourth section. And they basically can't spill the beans about what's going on. And there's another couple clauses. The public debt cannot be questioned. That's what's going on now in 71. Nixon put us off the gold standard, which created this debt system to go outrageously, increase in the last, 30 years, 40 or 40 years, 50 years since that. It's been 50 years. So the debt's increase, and it can't be questioned because of the treason that people are.
Let me take this to the current events. You know, Donald Trump says we will never be socialist. We will never be have socialist. But many believe, with many evidence, that we are already deep in the neck of socialism. What the next step is naturally communism. And it looks like everybody that looks on the streets today and everything that's going on and all the tyranny and all the shaming and all this other stuff and the riots and the burning and everything, the looting, you name it, they believe this is another effort by, you know, just like the Jacobins and the Bolsheviks, you know, what they have done throughout time. And, of course, the northern excursion on the south during the Civil War. So this is what we're seeing, the natural, you know, this technocratic takeover. You know, there's many names to this. Communitarianism, plutocracy, corporatism. You know, we got all these labels, but what is it really?
It's all confusing. They do that on purpose. Communism, all the planks of the Communist Manifesto have been sufficiently applied in the United States for the last, as of 50 years ago. So America has been communist for the last 50 years, fully under the Communist Manifesto. What you're seeing now is Marxist, cultural Marxism. It's just a dog and pony show or shenanigans that kind of do different things to maintain the system, if you will. So all this crap that's going on right now, it's just to maintain the system. And that's what it is. And every political ism falls under communism.
The system, but it looks like they're trying to shake it down and tear it apart where they can. But you know, isn't it all in all just really the big distraction while there's a lot of other things going around in the background? Sure.
That's another angle of it, yes. Yeah, what this virus is supposed to do is what the Communist Manifesto's two main points were are to, people aren't taught in school this. I figured this out by reading the thing, for God's sakes. It doesn't take two brain cells to figure out what was going on. But all these people in Harvard and all these political science classes and these colleges and high school read it, and I don't know, they just don't figure it out for whatever reason. But the Communist Manifesto meaning a declaration of war, first off. So what the so-called communist is, which is really the synagogue of Satan, was an entity that declared economic war on the world. That's what the Communist Manifesto is, an economic declaration of war. So it does is it was meant to do two things: create a major workforce or a unified workforce out of the lower class and the middle class, bourgeois and proletariat. Proletariat being the lower class or the working class, as Marx put it, and destroy the middle class, which accordingly also destroys all their property rights and businesses. And this virus thing they did is under that aspect of the Communist Manifesto or communism. It's meant to destroy and hinder middle class or small businesses. So and that's what's going on with that.
Then it funnels into the hands of the big corporations.
Exactly, exactly.
The Amazons, the Apples, the Walmart, right. The Home Depots, the who knows that's going to be still standing.
Right. That's the main thing it was meant to do, okay? It did those two things, but it was to consolidate wealth in the hands of a few elitists.
And it's practically the old saying of the company store. When you only have one isolated place to go to do your business, and it's not any of your friends, your family, your neighbors, it's not a spread out economy, and it funnels in, it is technically the company store.
Right, right. I agree with that analysis or explanation.
You know, I wanted to touch on, I don't know if we have any time left, just in brief, can you give us a brief, because Karl Marx was in contact with Abraham Lincoln, and he was...
Yes.
A great inspiration, Lincoln. They were buds. They were pen pals. So, is there anything significant? I mean, just in brief, that you could say the communication between Marx and Lincoln.
Basically, people don't understand that the Red Party right now, the Republicans, they're the original Communist Party. They are the ones that started this. Lincoln, the hammer and sickle of communism. Lincoln established the Department of Agriculture, which is the sickle of communism, in 1863. The people that brought this forward were rich industrialists, mostly that worked for the railroads, and that's the hammer of communism, industry. So if anyone knows anything about the history of the United States, the North was an industrial-based economy. And the South was agriculture. So what they had to do is destroy. This had nothing to do with slavery. It had to do with taking the so-called slaves and destroying the agriculture business of the South and unifying it into one, which is the communist principle into the United States. So that's basically simply what the Civil War is about.
Right. The narrative of freeing the slaves didn't come up until like 3 years into the war when they had to justify it.
Right.
To justify it to the world, all the pretty much the genocide that was going on to the Southerners and all the damage they were doing. So right. they had to give it a just cause. But people really do know in today's society, or many do, is that slavery was on its way out anyway. I mean, it's not
because
like
the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, it was on its way out.
Which is another revolution they started, in my estimation. They had to make more money, so they started the Industrial Revolution, and the blueprint was the Communist Manifesto to regulate the profits that would come from an industry increase.
Right.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It's all good. Only if we had more time, we could get into more detail. I want to ask, did you watch the... Trump rally last night in Tulsa, Oklahoma?
No, I don't pay too much attention to many people's opinions and whatever. I know what's going on is the dog and pony show, and the order out of chaos is another part of the show. I call it shit show lately. Shit show 2020 is what I call it. Just named it this last weekend or this last few days. But
friendly show, by the way.
What?
This is a family-friendly show.
By the way. Okay.
But anyway, sorry about that. It's okay. I was just curious if you.
Yeah. Anyway. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
No, I watched a little bit of it, and I noticed no one had a mask on, the virus mask and whatever, but that's about all I got out of it.
Well, some people did have it on. What really struck me is the Right Side Broadcasting, one of the interviewers there, cameraman, reporters, whatever. He was wearing a mask, but yet he was a white guy, prim and proper guy, and he was wearing a dust mask. And we're not, people say masks all the time. These are dust masks, folks. When you do drywall, or if you're in a garbage dump, you're cutting sawdust with wood with, have all the debris around, you wear a dust mask. That's all these are, whether it's a bandana. None of these are medically inclined for anybody. But anyway, this guy, he was wearing one, but then he had his co-reporter, which is a black girl, nice, prim and proper black girl, come up and said she was talking to her and he's wearing a mask and she's not. So I'm looking at him going, oh, maybe he's a racist. Maybe he thinks he's going to.
He's just part of the show, you know.
I don't like the word racist. It was a made up term in the early 1900s that never caught traction then. It really didn't gain any steam. They kept throwing it out there, and it finally caught steam around the 1960s. And today, it's like, you know, you don't like olives, you're a racist. You know, I mean, they just abuse this thing to the ninth degree.
Like I say, they didn't keep this thing going 150 years without their propaganda and their terminologies to brainwash people to use. Wanted to talk about the 13th Amendment. That was the one, the Emancipation Proclamation, dealt with freeing the slaves. And it also says there's no involuntary servitude, which is the one we use against these people. I have a saying that says the 13th Amendment saves, the 14th Amendment enslaves.
Right. Well, we're about out of time here, LB. Yeah. If there's anything you want to say about your website or anything else?
No, we just got a 20 years have been wasted because we're not unified. And I wrote my book, and if people read my book and this thing went viral overnight, the system would be done within a month. I'm telling you. LB,
it's not over till it's over. To mention that LB broadcasts here Tuesday evenings at Revolution.radio at Studio A, often with his guest, Mike Getty, a Civil War historian and a great fella. He's really committed to history and the proper view of it. So thank you, LB. Appreciate you being with us. Again, we're about to have our break music here. So thanks for coming, and then coming up in the next segment, we will have another special guest, and hopefully you stay tuned. Thank you, one. Thank you all. FreedomSlips.com, Freedom_Slips at Twitter. Thank you.
The government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number 3 is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
Well, we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition 1. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the unequivocal truth. DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, folks. This is Jim Fetzer's The Raw Deal at Revolution Radio, revolution.radio, freedomslips.com. Follow us at Twitter at freedom_slips at Twitter. For the latest and greatest information, if they can keep up with that, that'd be great. This is 100% listener supported. So you can also go to our chat room, which you'll find at freedomslips.com, and you can join and interact there with all the people that are there often and sharing links and other type of information. You get together with like-minded people. Also, there's a Patreon page link down there that you could also click on and be a regular patron donor per month. And it's really easy, simple to do. Not a lot of thought to it. Put in your info for a credit card or debit card or whatever it may be, and that'll come out on a monthly basis, and you help support the network. Again, this is the 100% listener supported. There is no advertising. This is a very difficult time. We don't have any billionaires or oligarchs or plutocrats or any of that type of deal going on here. So, Mitchell, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Did you take a gander at the Trump rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma last evening?
No.
No,
I didn't.
Better things to do, huh?
I peeked in, when they were talking about some of the stuff going on outside, but I really didn't go in and listen to the show. I just kind of wanted to see what all was going on, around the outside. And so, yeah, it's however, my nephew, Ryan, he lives in Oklahoma, and he went to the rally. So
he gained entry.
Yes, he was there. I guess because of how far he had to travel, him and his wife and his daughter had a hotel room. And I guess what happened, he said they were going to go camp and camp out, because they were worried about getting in because of the million ticket hype that was pushed. And what he found out after he got there, and they were there for a while, that the line wasn't so long that they had to sleep out to gain entry. So I guess they got a hotel, and they just got up in the morning and went over. And so,
question on my mind is, and I guess I've always wondered it because I've never tried to get a ticket, and I can't recollect what anybody said about it. Do they charge for those tickets, or is it just
No, and it's not even a ticket. You sign up for a slot, and you're not guaranteed that slot because it's first come, first serve. So, they essentially had, a 700, 800,000, how many people, wanted tickets.
With that said, you're saying it's
general admission.
Put yourself on the reserve list, then why were so many seats empty? Because Ocasio-Cortez is.
It's because. Okay. The reason there were empty seats there were thousands of people that were turned away by security that were not allowed past the barriers to get even close to getting into the venue. And that was because Antifa, or I should say Black Lives Matters, and Antifa, one or the other, or probably some of both, closed down and were protesting at the entrances where they had metal detecting screeners. And once that those entrances were shut down, people could not get a security screening to actually go into the venue. So, basically the police kept the crowds apart. And then once all the people that were then there that were there early, Ryan said, he said that, they were there, they got there, the line moved pretty fast. They got into the venue, and that it was after the initial crew of line of people that were there, after they got in, and it got closer to the rally time, that's when, Black Lives Matters, the Marxists and the Klansmen moved in to shut off access.
With Black Lives Matter being, I don't know if they're officially, but pretty much they are acting as and are just short. I don't know what they got to do for them to be officially declared as a political party, but this is what they're acting like. So for them to get in front of another political opponent's,
well, they are a political party
gathering. Well, right. I mean, so is Al Qaeda. By the way, Al-Qaeda is a political party. People don't realize that, they're not just the old terrorist group or whatever you want to label them, the rebellion or whatever they are in anybody's minds. They are a political party. Okay. Trump, and this, I just say this because Trump in his last 3 years was going to meet with Al-Qaeda to do negotiations, but you don't meet with terrorists to do negotiations. You meet with a political party. And therefore, now you have the BLM acting like this political party. And they confirmed it on a video when they shunned away the Minnesota mayor, was it? That Jacob, whatever his name was, when he was there, and the girl that was standing there, and when they shamed him to go away, she said, I'll be running against you this next election, basically, is what she said.
Yeah, he lost. I mean, he's done. He pissed, because he said no, and then slinked away, his political future is already over. It's done. First, Republicans and conservatives and independents aren't going to vote for him. And second off, he didn't even have the, there was a person that was in a position of power. And if he'd have stood there and said, no, I'm not leaving, what would have happened? And that's the crucial thing. Would they have attacked the mayor of Minneapolis and thrown him out of the rally? Would they forcibly do this? See, and this, as I was talking earlier, these are some of the things that are going to have to be, that are going to have to happen. That, the big lying Marxists and the Klansmen of the 21st century, they will be forced. The only time they will commit heinous acts on individuals that we haven't hit the right person yet, I guess is what I'm saying. We haven't hit, someone that is within the political system. We haven't seen attack on a well-known person by Antifa or by, the Black Lives Matters group. When that does happen, and when we see them start literally violence on candidates, and this is one of the things that will finally change the public opinion about these groups. Now, there will always be these clinger honors that will, they'll never give up Black Lives Matters. But the thing is about Black Lives Matters, okay? All of the money donated to Black Lives Matters goes to a Democrat political action committee called Act Blue. And they basically support only, you know, Democrat candidates. So, you know, everybody should know and realize now and understand by now that BLM, Antifa, and a lot, and, you know, by any means necessary, you know, they had to drop that because of the connotation that that brings up. But all of these violent Democrat groups are, they're going to have to be shut down somehow, whether they commit enough crime to where they are shut down, you know, by their own actions. You know, people get tired of it. I don't know. I can't say, but you know, there's going to come a point where the assaults and the batteries and the looting and scooting, is going to push people over the edge. And, you know, and there's going to be white and black people that are going to take on Black Lives Matters. It's basically, it's a Democrat hate group, and there really is nothing else to say about it, except, you know, it's run by Marxists and their intention is political discourse. And that's their bottom line.
Let me back up what you were saying earlier about the protesters, BLM, Antifa, whoever other insurgent type individuals blocking off people that just wanted to go and see the president and enjoy a good time and, you know, some exercise some of their freedoms here in America. Mm-hmm. But Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she writes in her Twitter, actually, you just got rocked by teens on TikTok who flooded the Trump campaign with fake ticket reservations and tricked you into believing a million people wanted your white supremacist open mic enough to pack an arena during COVID. And then Brad Parcell replies, radical protesters fueled by a week of apocalyptic media coverage interfered at real Donald Trump support rallies. They even blocked access to the metal detectors, preventing people from entering. Thanks to the thousands who made it. And he puts in a
Democrats believe that, you know, they can use violence and other tactics to disrupt a political campaign, and then that's okay. Okay.
Well, they
you
have
know, that's that isn't
it's worked for them for decades and generations. So why change now? You know, and the propaganda machine is in working overtime. You know, I mean, one thing. Again, this Donald Trump, as much as we want him to do well and so on and so forth, why does he not make it to where it's illegal to put the propaganda upon the American people? I don't know if a declaration, an executive order.
Well, I do believe that we need to bring back the Schmidt-Munt Act. Is that what it was?
Yes,
for the,
yes.
For
originally
the propaganda right. used on the American people. That needs to be reinstated. You know, there are a lot of things that need to be reinstated, but you know, we have to remember that we have a First Amendment right to lie. Now, people may not appreciate that, but you know, news organizations and media have been lying to us for as long as I've been alive. Intentionally lied, knowingly lied. So yeah, we are in a nation where, you know, you can lie, but you can't tell someone that a man girl, or a woman man, that they can use the opposite bathroom because, you know, they feel like it. I don't know how to really explain it. I mean, we've just gone so far over the edge with so much political ignorance we've lost all common sense. And
that's right.
You know, this sexual dysphoria and all this other stuff. And it's people are buying into damage, psychologically damaged people, and saying, oh, it's fine. It's okay. It's no problem. So that's a serious problem on top of all these other things that we have, you know, with the intentional political discourse driven by propaganda that is designed to divide and conquer. And but we can't, you know, it's like making a law to call somebody by their correct or their assumed gender. Okay. Not a boy or a girl or a man or a woman, but, you know, one of these 56 different varieties of sexual orientation that they say we have.
Well, I think that number is probably up over 1,000 by now, Mitchell, but we're going to relieve some pressure off you to have to explain any more about this and get into it. We do have a passenger in the green room, and we'll get to him in just a moment. He's going to be speaking, bringing up some current coronavirus, COVID-19 pandemic type news. But let me just give those current figures here. We're just doing a little search of an updated version. And it says Illinois cases, 136,762 confirmed deaths, 6,647. United States cases as of June 21st, that's today, folks, confirmed 2,300,011,345 deaths, 121,609 recovered, 718,301 global cases, 8,546,919 confirmed deaths, 456,726 recovered, 4,195,274. They're very accurate with that, don't you think, Mitch? So anyway, without any further ado, we have our passenger in the green room ready to go. Mitch? Mitchell?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Ah, so here we go. Giuseppe... he's familiar to the James Fetzer Show, a friend of Revolution Radio, also is new co-host to Scorpio, Dolphin Dave, on Saturdays between 2 to 4 Eastern Time. And Giuseppe, I brought you in today to talk about one of your specialties, which is the medical-type issue, especially dealing with this coronavirus, COVID, however people want to say, because it's got many tricky names, the invisible enemy. The COVID-19, the coronavirus, you know, basically a fear-demic all in all. Many don't discount, and from real good people out there that are credible, they do declare there is an actual strain, which could be called COVID-19, another aka SARS-2, and so on. But the whole disbogglement, the whole dysphoria of it is when they bounce back and forth with all the trickery, coronavirus, just to be in generalization, just to confuse you and just so they can help get numbers up in many different ways. So without further ado, let me ask you, what do you have for us today? Thank you.
Well, what's going on is the continued push by freedom-minded people, including my friend Dr. Judy Mikovits, is going to be a massive rally this Tuesday at the California Capitol, A Call for Change. Judy speaking, the whistleblower nurse Aaron Olszewski is speaking, and I just learned a couple hours ago that Robert Kennedy Jr. is going there to speak. So this is such a criminal escapade, it's beyond belief. And it ties into what Mitchell was addressing earlier about the attack on the norms of a civil society, of a European civil society. And this has such a stunning parallel to the insane lies perpetrated upon Weimar Germany, the Weimar Republic. I mean, this is, if you went by the media, we are now Weimerica, not America. And the bottom line is that the brilliant radical journalist, Harry Vox, VoxNews.com, in 2014, discovered a Rockefeller Institute report, and because they are Satanists that perform some type of black magic, they always have to somehow reveal what they're going to do to you, the public, and then somehow that absolves them of being part of the dark karma that comes from these egregious satanic crimes. And he unveiled in 2014 that they were listing all the scenarios which we are currently in now. There's a video that's been taken off of YouTube, and it is on BitChute, and it is at his website, VoxNews.com, from 2014, where he's being interviewed by an independent cable TV station host, and he's laying it all out, and it's freaking him out. And it's so prescient. But essentially, Tony Fauci is a criminal mass murderer. His real area of expertise that never comes up in the mass media, and I was just having a conversation with Judy Mikovits about this Friday evening. He is a bioweapons dealer and producer. $500 billion a year the U.S. spends on bioweapons development, which is all this chimeric bringing over a bat virus, which is what was done with Wuhan. But that didn't happen, the lie right away. Oh, it came from a wet market. No, it didn't. No less than the Nobel Prize winner, Luc Montagnier, who discovered AIDS, acquired immune deficiency RNA virus snippet, has come out and said, look, this is a weaponized virus. And you cannot have 100% matching of certain key factors in the analysis unless it was created in a lab. If something jumps in nature, it becomes, it's only 80-70% match. It's never 100% match. And what's more is this was released years ago. When they have been intentionally releasing bioweapons for at least 30 years because they want this worldwide mandatory vaccination policy implemented. It's because what will happen is, imagine these numbers. Right now, the vaccine industrial complex and the cancer industrial complex are one of the top corporate cabals in the world in terms of annual revenues in the hundreds of billions of dollars. If they could get an actual bioweapon that they release to kill, 100 million people, and the whole world would be begging for that vaccine, there'd be like 20-mile lines, like the Beatles came back from the dead and reunited for tickets. People would be in tents. They'd be lined up 20 miles out to get that shot. That takes that industry from annual gross revenue of, say, $400 billion a year to annual gross revenue of about $14 trillion a year. And so much of that is just pure profit. It makes them the largest transnational corporations by a factor of like 100 over Amazon or any of the tech giants or anything. So that's their agenda. And the level of control over all that is just stunning. So that's what's going on. There is the so-called COVID-19 SARS-2 was released several years ago. My wife and I had it 2 years ago. A lot of people had it. It's a nasty bug. You can get rid of it. And the interesting thing that the fear factor of, oh my God, this healthy 27-year-old got COVID-19 SARS-2 and they died a day later. That is not that bug. What that is, well, it's partially that bug. That bug has circled the world many times. It was released 2015, 2016. And everybody has it, just like everybody has a little snippet of HIV in them. Everybody has a little snippet of Ebola. That's just the nature of the earth as a petri dish. And so, but the thing is, as long as you're healthy, it never activates. It never begins to materialize. So that's like, well, we'll get into this in a moment, the farce of the testing that they keep saying, oh, 1,000 more people tested, but let me finish this thought, which is the people who are dying of this so viciously and brutally and quickly are getting a flu vaccine, and the tainted flu vaccines are activating what's in the patient. So Judy Mikovits said repeatedly Friday, don't get a flu vaccine, no matter what. Flu vaccines will kill you. Let me say that again. Flu vaccines will kill you. That's their phase two implementation. That's going to activate and kill a lot of people.
Well, with that said, you know, when does flu season actually begin? When they start handing out the flu shots, because who is patient zero? You know, who's patient right. zero? Where did this flu come from? And all, but, you know, it just happens to be when they're pandering those flu shots. Get it for free. Get a $20 grocery ticket for free groceries or 10 cents off your gas if you get this flu shot. You know, they got to pay you to take the flu shot. So it's just, that should be a red flag first off and off. But, you know, the frugal American who buys all their stuff from China and has no problem decimating their economy will just go in for that all day long. But, you know, you mentioned, you know, people be if they actually release a new something that actually gets people sick, that they'd be lined up 20 miles long to get that vaccine. You know, when I look around today and see people wearing their masks and they don't want to touch you and you're too close and they're following all the guidelines and they're really in fear. You could see it in their eyes. They don't, you know, it's like we're at the bar yesterday and everyone was having a good time, but today all of a sudden there's something that I can't be around anybody. I think today, if a vaccine magically appeared, there would be lines out the door out of every CVS, every Walgreens, every doctor's office. You know, you'd need stadiums like the Trump rallies used to be in order to fulfill the need for all these people that are scared out of their wits. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely agree. And the sad fact is a Chinese study was just released that a vaccine for the SARS-CoV-2 will not really prove helpful for infection because their growing body of evidence indicates that the antibodies for the SARS-CoV-2 will only last no more than 3 months. So they're talking about you need a new shot once a year. In reality, if you really wanted the antibodies, you would need a shot every 3 months, which is ridiculous. But here's the good news. There's a Nobel Prize-winning scientist and his associate, Michael Levitt and Carl Frispin, have released a statistical observation that up to 80% of the world population is not even susceptible to COVID-19 SARS-2. We have a natural immunity built up since it has been around for 5 years, maybe more, maybe less, but at least 5 years.
Well, of course.
So this just shows how... Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well,
go ahead. This shows...
It just shows how incredibly criminal this totalitarian attack, this globalist attack on the world to enslave. And it's funny. It's really it is fascism. But at this point, they're like on the ESPN late night poker show. They're going all in for global totalitarianism. It's insane.
Well, we have an uneducated society anymore, especially here in these Western nations where they don't teach you anything. They don't teach you anything about biology or science or anything else. So people don't even really understand what they're dealing with. They don't understand that their first defense of anything is their immune system, that the creator gave them an immune system that works wonderfully well as long as you can take care of it, eat the right foods and don't eat the wrong things, whether that may be. You know, so, you know, we've just been created. We've been the perfect machine. We have lasted, you know, if you want to believe real history, since the Stone Age when there was dinosaurs and they were doing their survival. And every little germ, every little cold, all throughout history is, you know, again, what they share with us in these books. You know, they want to call real history, and many are still confused on what that may be. But nonetheless, we have survived. We have adapted. We have beat. Some people died, the weak. But the strong, the survival of the fittest have gone on, and here we are today. But that has all disappeared. All of a sudden, there's this invisible enemy, this virus that just appeared out of nowhere, and it's everywhere. It's so you can't see it, but eventually but you can breathe it in, which a dust mask or a bandana is going to protect you. I don't know how that is.
Right.
It's not medically suited. If you're not hooked up to an oxygen tank. You see people deal with viruses in these little films, and other propaganda pieces on television and so on, where they're in total hazmat suits. You see them go into laboratories where they're dealing with viruses, and they get decontaminated in their hazmat suits. And when they come out, they get decontaminated. So how do you know people don't correlate it? They don't balance, you know, the information. And this is what's really disappointing. And then, you know, just to go even out here where I'm at, as things are opening, haircutter places and restaurants and so on and so forth, the employees are mandated to wear masks. And then if they're not just mandating the employee to wear these dust masks, they're mandating the customers to do so also. And this is, it's ridiculous. Yes.
It is. It's totally obscene. I went to pick up, my wife had oral surgery Wednesday. I went to pick up some good old chicken soup from a deli that does walk-ups. So I'm walking up outside. There's multiple people waiting for their orders. Everybody's not just 6 feet apart. They're more like 12 to 15 feet apart. And they're all wearing masks, and I didn't. I just looked at them. I'm like, God, that's crazy. Why are you wearing a mask outdoors? It's worthless. So I'm just minding my business. And then this older woman in a real nice Mercedes car, probably, I don't know, 70-ish, she's just glaring at me, and I just smirked and looked at her, glared right back at her. And she turns around to walk away, and she's about three steps away from the front counter, outdoor counter. And she goes in her loudest voice, "Can you believe this guy is not wearing a mask?" And I was like, I looked around like, what guy? I was like, all of a sudden, oh, you're talking about me. And if I originally, and for a moment I got really angry, and then it made me laugh. So all I did, I have a booming voice in the real world, is I just looked at her, and she wouldn't turn back and look at me. You know, she's a coward, like so many cowards in masks. And I just went, bah, in a loud, loud voice, and that was that. But it's so sad that these people who should be intelligent, who should be able to realize that the autism epidemic is caused by vaccines, the outrageous amount of newborn death, SIDS is vaccine death. They're murdering every time at this school where a bunch of kids who are morons because they're afraid of the measles and the chickenpox, they have an outbreak. They act like it's a real Ebola outbreak, and they're all going to die. And every one of them was vaccinated. It's such a scam. Vaccines don't work. You know, vaccines as prophylactic preventatives do not work because nature's too complex. And it's just insane why anybody would inject something into themselves other than for life-threatening issues, like if your heart stops and they have to jam a needle into your heart for epinephrine.
It's laziness. It's the quick fix. It's just like people that are overweight want to take a pill in order to take care of their issues. They don't want to work out. They don't want to eat better. They just want something lazy. That's why you have all these, you know, tens of thousands of products that deal with weight loss and so on. I want to reflect back for a moment to that 70-year-old, you know, give or take whatever age, year old lady. This woman is selfish, don't you think? She has gone her entire life without ever having to deal with anything like this before. She should know enough about life. She grew up as a child and played in the dirt and so on and so forth, pre-internet, pre-cell phone. She played in the dirt and played outside and went to the lakes and enjoyed her life and so on and so forth all this time without any major crisis. And all of a sudden, in her late age here, at about 70 or so, give or take, she is now expecting that everybody else should give up the privilege, the wonderful freedoms that she once had, and they must wear a mask like a slave. And then you got this other spectrum of people who are young, maybe, you know, whatever, in their teens, young 20s, 30s, have gone most of their life without a mask or having to deal with anything like this, but all of a sudden are convinced that you must wear a mask and are willing to give up their freedoms to live the rest of their lives being abnormally distanced, to wear a mask, to not have to be able to go to a nightclub or a bar or have a get together or have a funeral, for goodness sake. They want to give it all up. Oh. What is it? You know, it's just the craziness of it all. And to find anybody that actually agrees with any of that is difficult. Because it's just kind of like, you don't know who to talk to, who to approach, who to share the information with, because they could turn around and go, Black Lives Matter. Because before you finish something off, yeah, hey, did you hear John Rapoport? Oh, he's credible. Do you know who he is? No, but I'm sure he's someone your president likes. So, you know, this stuff is just obscene. And it's difficult to believe that we're in this type of situation today of how people act, react, and they go about business and expect you to do as they're doing. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, my God, you're exactly right. The power of television and now the internet screens, which are the same as television, the power of images, sound and spoken word and text to entrain the weak mind is shocking. And this is all mind control, operant mind control. And this has been going on, you know, more or less since the 40s with radio. But and they discovered, holy cow, this is really something, beginning in the 60s. And since about the 70s, especially kicking in around the greed is good, Wall Street, insane wealth transfer, the 80s and beyond, they have realized the power of celebrity, the power of authority figures who do not deserve the position of authority, like L.B. Bork and Mitchell were talking about earlier last hour, that, you know, that is just the Uniparty, which is the globalist bankster party, controls this government. And it's just insane. And you're absolutely right that most people are so a combination of operant mind control and fear trauma conditioning. They are just putty in the hands of these synagogue satanists.
Well, I have often likened this to Orson Welles' broadcast back in the day when he, just broadcasting off of one radio station, said that the Martians had landed and all this was going on and people were being killed and this was being invaded. And it had so many people panicking and freaking out. They got to their guns and went to the streets. They went to their cellars. Some people committed suicide thinking this was actually happening. And then to find out later that it was just him, he had to come out and say it was a hoax. He was just kidding, whatever it is, however the dialogue goes. But that was a great example of what is going. I liken it to today, because what he did then is what they're doing now.
Oh, on a global scale, without a doubt. The only hope I have is that somehow when they come out with this vaccine in 2021, and they will, and when millions of people die and tens of millions of people get ill and there's no way to treat them, and they're left suffering, if it doesn't kill them, a little longer lingering death, that the rest of the world will wake up and see this scam. Because right now, to give any credence to a weak-minded, opportunistic, grifter thug like Anthony Fauci, who is nothing but a paid operative for the pharmaceutical criminal cabal, is just insane. And that's what's going on. And our only hope to being awake is that there's a great guy, Dr. Zach Bush. He's just a brilliant, brilliant young man. I mean, a generational type intellect, really wise wisdom. And he's treated medicine from newborn obstetricians to running a hospice end of life. He's seen the whole thing. And he says, you know, there's three fundamental building blocks of life, and life on this planet always wants to keep creating life. And so you've got fungi, bacteria, and viruses, and they're constantly mutating every moment. So these arrogant clowns, these corporate scientists, these masters of pseudoscience, they think they're so bright because they can tweak one gene. And he says that the nature life is changing thousands every moment. And so that's why when they intentionally released Ebola in 2014, when they intentionally released SARS-1 and SARS-2 and the H1N1, and going back, you know, intentionally released AIDS, actually, and we're dumb enough to didn't realize it became aerosolized and airborne. And they always think, oh boy, here we're going to get our population reduction, we're going to kill a billion and then the rest will be our slaves. But you know what? It always, when it's maybe the deadliest thing in a petri dish in a lab, get it out in reality and nature, and it all of a sudden it modulates, because the bigger code, the code of the divine, the code of the creators, the builders who set this in motion, they don't want someone to be able to wipe everyone out like that. And so it modulates, it turns off and becomes, mutates into something that's like a cold or less. And that is what gives me hope, that at some point, well, the real death is going to come from the vaccines, that they don't understand what they're doing at the RNA level. And then that wakes up the rest of the people, I hope.
Well, let me run you by run this by you in a Q&A type of fashion. A virus is dead. Yes or no?
No, a virus is neither alive or dead. It's just an obligate parasite. It's just a tool that has the code. And for example, an RNA virus, it has to get into a cell and it has to grab components of a cell to then fully replicate. You know, it's like in the movie The Terminator. In those machines, they figure out a way to continue to build themselves. It is just a unit. It's never alive. It's never dead. Its function is when it can penetrate a cell. It uses the components of the cell to replicate and make more virus. That's its prime directive.
So that said, it doesn't have legs, doesn't have wings. It doesn't have great jumper ability like someone in the Olympics to get from person to person. So technically, from what my understanding is, the best and the most foremost way to get a virus is to have it A, injected, or B, like blood transfusion, blood to blood, or in that type of contact. So is that
right? That's exactly right. And the third way is because they are obligate parasites and don't have legs, not alive, as I mentioned a moment ago. The third way is in a fluid, like somebody sneezes and it's in the expectorant. Or someone coughs and it's in the saliva or the expectorant, but that is an inefficient way. That's why a lot of people, you're around somebody with a cold, people with a weaker immune function will get the cold, but someone who's healthy, they were about right next to the same person and they never get it. So yeah, the two most guaranteed ways are, like you said, the injection, which is the contaminated blood supply, or vaccine injection, which is the contaminated vaccines. It's unbelievably, and they know this. They've known this because Judy Mikovits, her career was ruined because she brought this up, 30 years ago when she did her PhD, her groundbreaking PhD work and saved Magic Johnson's life. And she came right out. And then she found a company who could have cleaned up the blood supply using UV lights. And they don't want that.
Without getting further down the road here, you know, it's suspected, and one or two people may have mentioned this, that the introduction of this SARS-2, this strain, this COVID-19 strain, has been introduced, and you mentioned 2015, 2016, through the flu vaccine. And then from that, we've had these massive number of cases in 2016, 17, 18 of massive flu deaths that affected many people. And they were sort of high death flu seasons. But all of a sudden now that they wanted to publicize and pull back the curtain to this SARS-2 strain, that the flu no longer exists. You know, heart disease is down and all sorts of things. But, you know, it's just all these deaths are attributed to coronavirus or COVID-19, even though they don't have to prove it one way or another because they technically can't. You know, someone, as John Rappaport says, somebody may die with the virus in their system or die with antibodies, but they didn't actually die of it. Go ahead.
Right. And here's what's astounding that no one, the listeners, the lucid listeners of Revolution Radio, by the way, contribute and support this fine platform. There is no test for COVID-19 SARS-2. There's absolutely no test. The swab in the back of the sinus cavity can scrape up anything and you want to find. If you want to say, oh, this person's an AIDS carrier, I guarantee you could find an AIDS snippet of RNA. We all have that everywhere. We're all in a living biosphere. And number two, the Serumlogic antibody test, the vendors themselves, the manufacturers say in the instructions, do not use this as a diagnostic test. It's at least 50% false positive. It just gives you an idea of what the antibodies are doing. It's not a diagnostic. And then it gets better because they already know they can't test for it. And yet every day in the newspapers, and you just quoted the statistics, they don't know that the people have this issue. This SARS, COVID-19 SARS-2. And then it gets better because not only can they not test for it, they go and say, oh, well, they, people have it, but it's asymptomatic, and they lie about what the antibodies mean. The IgG antibody, when they find that, the real science means you're immune to it. You had it, your body built up a natural immunity. An IgM antibody test positive actually means that you, your body, you have it, it's a little active, your body is successfully dealing with it. You're not a carrier, you're not, you know, in both cases, the test, real science, is actually a good thing. So it's just so criminal.
Right. Well, we're running down in time here. We've got about 10 minutes or so left in the broadcast, but there's a couple different directions I want to go, and I'm kind of struggling which way, but let me go with this. How about we had hydroxychloroquine, which came out as something that could help treat and maybe eliminate any symptoms and whatever, if somebody actually got a major case of this, if they were diagnosed or if they actually had symptoms, okay, so real symptoms of having, you know, coronavirus or COVID-19. I don't even know. It's so confusing anymore. But they had the hydroxychloroquine, but they wanted to downplay that so much. And even if it was FDA approved, been around for 70 years, so on and so forth, world leaders were taking it, but it was no good. They were punishing any physicians that wouldn't even want to prescribe it. So then we had this company come out with their, what was it, Remdesivir, where they promoted right. for a day and a minute that this is the new drug. This is going to help. And their stocks went through the roof. A bunch of people took their stock options and sold out of it. And then to find out later, they said, oh, no, this isn't going to work either. So then, you know, there was just a big money, a little laundering scheme there. And then now they're talking about a steroid. Now, the steroid, and I can't remember all the factors to it, but this steroid they're introducing is a nasty piece of business. It drives people, my understanding, it'll drive you insane. It is a very nasty piece of whatever, and it makes you wonder if this steroid isn't already being prescribed to the people we see in the streets today with the Antifa, the BLM, or whoever, because this is one nasty piece of business. It'll drive people to heights of, I don't know, just dysphoria or whatever. Is the steroid, and again, I can't name it or whatnot. People probably heard it recently or maybe not, but whatever it is, stay away from it. Go ahead.
Right, absolutely. Oh yeah, the corporate criminal cabal of the vaccine industrial complex absolutely doesn't want real solutions, natural solutions. The hydroxychloroquine is an awesome prophylactic. It will treat early on as soon as you have it. You take a low dose. It works much like homeopathics do. It stimulates the body to activate the immune function and heal itself and wall off the virus. And so that's the funny thing, is people like Anthony Fauci, and everything is a war on viruses, a war on this, a war on that. We have to go to war and attack it. And the reason Judy Mikovits had the revolutionary idea, and she realized, hold on, you'll never beat the virus that mutates too quickly. You'll kill the patient, the host, before you do that. What you have to do is strengthen and boost the patient's immune function so the virus never has the active environment like a petri dish with full of food, which is what a sick person is, that you don't have the macrophages and the neutrophages and everything, all the various five different kinds of white blood cells that go after anything and stop it before it can do what I described earlier, which is invade cells and grow and grow and grow until it overwhelms the immune function. And so that's brilliant. And that's what hydroxychloroquine does. And that's what some of these other natural treatments that they never talk about does. So it's just all about the Goyim cattle and are useful for amazing profits. And now we need to control the cattle, and we need to enslave the cattle. And it's not good enough that the cattle are pretty much enslaved already on this nice big pasture, 1,000-acre pasture. And no, they want to change us into corporate cattle, where we're each in our little slot and we're constantly being fed a tube of deadly vaccines you get the metaphor. It's just so stupid.
Well, you got to constantly, if you're in business and you're a corporation, you got to be constantly expanding your consumer base and your profit, you know, from that. So, you know, they got to keep creating new things in order. But, you know, when I think of John Rapoport or Dr. Cass Ingram, they say most of the disease or illnesses is basically environmental. The foods you eat or the foods you don't eat, the foods you're not getting nutrition from, the way you're taking care of yourself, that most of this is, again, an environmental cause, whether it be, you know, you want to talk about the towers and radio waves and this and that, or people want to mention, you know, whatever. But it's a mostly environmental. But if you take care of yourself,
in the modern world, you're absolutely right. It absolutely is the case. I mean, what the glyphosate does to the gut biome is just criminal. And in my medical training, Master of Science in Oriental Medicine, Bachelor of Science in Nutrition, Eastern and Western Natural Nutrition, you know, everything, 90% of all diseases are traced to the gut and the gut biome. And to use an industrial pipe cleaner, which is what glyphosate was until it was repurposed and rebranded as a weed desiccant, and you have people and animals eat that, and we're destroying our own natural gut biome, which is our own pharmacy, which is our own hospital, which keeps us healthy against all this stuff. It's just insanely criminal. And we could go on and on, but that's just a fact. It's just satanically evil.
Right. With a few minutes left here, I want to ask, did you watch the Tulsa, Oklahoma Trump rally last evening?
No, I generally don't watch live things. I wait, and then when I'm doing other things, I put it on one of my monitors, and I'll kind of catch a little bit. But I it's funny, these days I find it enlightening to look at a mainstream left site like MSNBC, and then look at a mainstream right site, and then look at a real news site like, you know, Red States Radio or somebody like that, and look at a pretty viable progressive left site that's not buying into all this BLM stuff, which are few these days. And,
right.
And
well,
it's amazing how different the coverage is. Go ahead.
Let me, there's several things I could rip apart, you know, even though I'm trying to ride this Trump horse to the finish line, you know, when they give these speeches, and you had Pence up there and you had Trump up there, they both dared to mention ventilators in their speeches. Not one American went without a ventilator that needed it. Now, of course, I know this. I was saying this earlier, as soon as I started getting wind of it weeks ago, that these ventilators are murder machines. Basically, we have that Army nurse. People have seen the videos of the Army nurse that went to two different states, and she said the conditions in New York hospitals were worse than some of the third world countries she's been in, such as Iraq, that's how bad it was. And she was witnessing taking healthy people and putting them on ventilators. And in order to do that, they give them like 9 different types of drugs, and they pretty much put them in a coma, put them on this ventilator, and 24, 48 hours later, they'd be dead. So these were murder machines. So for them to be reiterating these ventilators, and you can start from the beginning, right from the get-go, before anybody even knew what was going on, they just started coming out with the propaganda. And I always remember Governor Cuomo, we need ventilators. We need 30,000, 40,000 ventilators. Trump is trying to kill us. We need ventilators. But before anybody even knew what was going on, the ventilators are going to be the solution. And that's what they were doing. And I looked at it back then, and I said, you know, hey, there's something going on with those ventilators, that they're money laundering. You know, they're doing it to money launder, whatever it is. But these ventilators are a key, whatever, fundamental issue for them. And, of course, we know, diagnosed with, they give you a diagnosis of COVID-19 or coronavirus, not even COVID-19, just coronavirus, you get $13,000. And then if you put them on a ventilator, another $39,000, $52,000, boom, in their pockets. Great money type of operation. So now, again, Trump and Pence both reiterating this darn ventilator thing. Do they not know? Are they that out of the loop that they don't know what these things did, and that they had no purpose being issued to begin with, part of this whole thing? Or are they just compliant with all these deaths? What do you think?
I think that that the people who write the speeches for Trump and Pence think that the ventilator is a buzzword because Fredo Cuomo, and much like George Foreman named all his sons George Jr., Mario Cuomo named all his sons Fredo because after Fredo the Coward and the Godfather, because he knew all his sons would be cowards, and they are. But anyway, I think they just used it as a buzzword that so it couldn't be used against them. And I think that's the level of ignorance and simplicity in the audience that they thought, the speechwriters thought, that this is an effective mechanism to turn the tables on the soundbite and the video clip of Fredo Cuomo saying, "Oh my God, we need more ventilators. Why aren't you giving us ventilators?" Yeah, it's, and here's even worse than just making the money, is there were actual good doctors who were recognizing that the symptoms caused by this mutated chimeric bug, SARS-2, were actually starving patients of oxygen. That's why their fingers and hands were blue and feet and all that stuff. And it was hypoxia. And so they were saying, we need to get these patients oxygen. And they were over countermanded by the management type in the hospital saying, no, we have to follow protocol. This is how we treat this. So there were doctors who wanted to treat these people and save their lives. And so they are mass murderers, criminals, right, and should be tried.
All right, Giuseppe, we're at the end of the show. If you want to real quick plug your Saturday show with Scorpio, we'd give a great appreciation.
Sure. It's the Scorpio's Conspiracy Show. It's Saturday Eastern Time, 2 to 4, and this Saturday, June 27th, we're going to have the fantastic Dr. Judy Mikovits as our guest.
Very good. We've got about 45 seconds left, so let me thank you all for staying tuned with us at Revolution Radio, revolution.radio, freedomslips.com. This was James Fetzer, The Raw Deal. I'd like to thank James Fetzer for allowing myself, Mitchell, Giuseppe, and LB Bork handle this show today in the care as best we could. I'd like to thank Matt Damon, who cannot be with us today, but he sent a message. How do you like them apples? So I appreciate you all. Stay tuned. You can catch the archives hopefully soon at Revolution Radio, revolution.radio, Studio A, Studio B. You all take care. Keep your head on a swivel. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope.
We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world